For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show. And yes, I'm Tim Fuel, and we're back with another season and another weekly look at the world of non-league football. Apologies for the late return, but in the mix of football, family, futile meetings, this has been the first occasion to put all the bits together. Not quite how we anticipated, but Moose still afoot for some changes. But whatever happens, be sure we are back for the season, so stay locked in and subscribed. It is the start of the FA Vars this weekend and the start of the 50th year of the competition. So some extra magic around, all brought to life by our very own at FA Vars FacVar, Mr. Phil Annette. Then it's off to the Buckinghamshire countryside and a grassroots club with a home draw this weekend against higher ranked opposition. A Vars run would be special, but the youth football development is the real focus, as we hear from Homer Green's chair, Rob Shedd. Bringing it all together and giving insight into some of the biggest stories this week is executive editor at the Non-League paper, Mr. John Couch, along with a preview of what's ahead in this weekend's issue. So we are back. So sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So we just had to return with the show this week, as perhaps our favourite competition celebrates a birthday, and a big one at that. The 50th year of the FA Vars gets underway this weekend, and who better to share the celebrations with than our very own Vars Stato, FA Vars Fact File, Mr. Phil Annette. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Phil.
Hi, Tim. Yes, it's brilliant to be back for the new season, and you're right, wonderful FA Vars celebrations happening this year.
Yeah, 50 years, and for those that didn't get to read your excellent double spread last week in the Non-League paper, it's a magical one, not only for the competition itself, but also for seven clubs who've been involved in every one of those competitions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I looked through the stats to find out if there had been any clubs who've done every year, and it turned out that there are seven that are taking part this season in the 50th competition that have been involved or at least entered every single one of the previous 49. And within them was a couple of former winners, including the very first winner way back in 1975, Hoddesdon Town. And so, yeah, they, along with Stansted, the other winners, Tunbridge Wells, who have made it to a final, and then we have Brockenhurst, Holbeach United, Saffron Town and Carn Town, who have all participated in some way, shape or form in every one of the 49 past Vars competitions and will do so again this year.
It's amazing, isn't it? And I think the stat from your article was there's some, was it 1,635 clubs that have competed in the FA Vars?
Yeah, it's a lot of clubs, a lot of small village and small town clubs that have had the chance to get a game at Wembley. And we know this competition can be won by anyone that takes part in it. So you know, every time any team enters, they'll be dreaming of the Wembley Arch now, of course, and what's the Towers. And they've got as much chance as stepping out there in May as any other club.
Yeah, and I think there's also that extra level of magic this season. Not only the magical year, the celebrations and all that stuff, but so few of the Step 6 clubs were able to compete in the FA Cup this season. So this really is their only dream of Wembley.
Yes, that is, yeah. With the change to the pyramid that was in place a couple of seasons ago, it has closed the door to the majority of Step 6 sides in the FA Cup. So this is their, as you said, their opportunity to shine and to get a chance to get all the way to Wembley. And we have seen it happen in the past. As I said, any club can win it. I think Ascot United last year was in Step 5, but they started off in the first qualifying round, which is what's happening this weekend, and went all the way to Wembley 9 games later.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, last season's winners, Ascot United, of course, now they're promoted, they're not able to compete in the competition. There are plenty of previous winners, though, scattered around the competition. You know, some of those, that magic seven that you mentioned there. I think that very first competition, just 220 clubs took part in that first season. But This season, we've got 597 clubs taking part. And I think 386 starting this weekend in 193 ties.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it? It isn't as many as have taken part in one campaign in the past. We've had over 600 or so before. So there's, I'd say there's still scope for more. There's a lot of Step 7 clubs who have the facilities to compete at Step 6 or above level. So it's a shame that the FA haven't allowed those clubs to continue to participate. But still, there are nearly 600 clubs to get the chance to have a day out of Wembley, perhaps. It's quite exciting for them.
Yeah, no, I think that 600 clubs, it just shows, and the fact that you said, you know, some of those Step 7 clubs could quite easily compete as well. It just shows the depth of football in this country. I wonder whether you know or whether any of our listeners are, is there a bigger cup competition in the world that doesn't include the top flight?
Well, I don't think there's one that doesn't include top flight, perhaps. But, yeah, it is quite a unique competition in a sense that, you know, we're talking the 9th and 10th tier of the football pyramid, and the competition ends with a big game at the national stadium. So I can't even think of another sport where that might even happen, never mind in football.
Yeah. And many of these clubs, you know, if they're already five or six games into the season because their season started earlier. Maybe they were competing in the FA Cup or maybe their league started earlier. So the table's, though, still too early to give a guide. But are there any maybe clubs making their debut this season that we should be looking out for?
There's quite a lot of clubs actually making a debut in the VAR. So I think there's 23 in the first qualifying round anyway, and a couple more that have been exempted until the next round. A couple to note on there. We've got a team called Moulton in Northamptonshire who are taking part for the first time. My interesting quirky fact on that one is that there has been another team called Moulton who have played in the VARs, and that was back in the very first campaign, and they were based in Cheshire. And that was the only time that they ever partook in the competition. So we've had to wait the 50 years to get the top and tail of the competition for two clubs with the same name to participate in it. Another couple of newbies there making a bit of note. We've got Eton Socken. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, but they were formed way back in 1867, apparently. So they have waited a long time to get involved in this competition, 157 years. And if they do go on to be in part of the FA Cup in the future, then that will be another record they'll be trying to break. But my favourite quirky stat of the newbies concerns Shire Hampton, who may not know it, but they've probably potentially got the luck of the draw as a hosting Wantage Town. And the Oxfordshire club weren't too keen for me to let everyone know that they've faced four clubs before who were playing the very first FA VARs game and have been beaten quite soundly in all four of them. So it'd be a chance for them to try and correct that record. But Shire Hampton, maybe now that they know that, might see that as a bonus and something to spur them on.
The managers always like something to stick up on the notice board or to try and inspire their players. And only you would know those sort of stats. So whether you'll be welcome back at Wantage, I'm not quite sure, but let's see after the weekend. that's the debutants. Anything else? Because I know we love a little bit of wordplay. I try to have a look through. There doesn't seem to be too many alliterative ties out there. But anything else that maybe we should be looking out for? What I love doing is just actually reading through the list of the names, and you realise that how special English non-league football is with some of the towns, some of the names, some of the history behind those. There's probably not enough hours left in my lifetime to read about the history of those sort of things, but they're the sort of things that I'm now looking for on Amazon. Is there a history of this club that I can go and read?
There are some wonderful names that are just that don't appear to the top end of the football pyramid and can be quite quirky, and you don't really want to single them out because the name stands out in a way, but it is nice to see. It just highlights how widespread the competition is, and just picking out one that I can see now is a Prudho Youth Club, and again, I don't know if I've pronounced Prudho correct, taking on Harrogate Railway Athletic. So I just find that a youth club taking on a railway club is quite a quirky mix and probably sums up non-league football quite well in terms of the names.
Yeah, and I love Barton Town Stockport Georgians because I want to know why they're the Georgians. What makes you a Georgian and what makes you stand out in that respect? It's a very exciting weekend, Phil, because it's been bank holiday, of course, as VARs games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Is there any particular game that you might be off on the road to go and visit?
Well, I decided that I would focus, if I could, on the clubs that are the members of the FA Vars 50. And I'm going to go down to Wiltshire to see Carn Town, one of the seven, take on Bradford Town. So a relatively local derby, I guess. It's not too far apart. And that's on Saturday, so that'll be where you'll find me.
That's well, people will find you. But, of course, you'll be, during that game, I'm sure, doing updates on all the various stats and insights and everything like that. As ever, can you remind everybody where they can follow you on social media, get more stats and facts about the FA Vars and also the FA Cup?
Yeah, so I run FA Vars Fact File, and ahead of this first qualifying round, I have produced stats and facts for majority of the ties that are going ahead. So if you look on my Twitter feed there, you'll be able to see, we'll be able to find your own club and what the stats I've got on that game in particular. And of course, I run a sister site called FA Cup Fact File, which obviously that competition's been going for a few weeks now. But again, you've got a similar kind of level of stats every time the rounds come around.
And as ever, every time we read those stats and facts, Phil, we learn. Every day should be a learning day. Every day should be an FA Vars Fact File, FA Cup Fact File day as well. Phil Annetts, it's been great to get you back on the Non-League Football Show. Great for us to be back, but great for us as a unit to be back as well. Thanks for joining us, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Great fun as always. Cheers.
So let's turn our attention to one of those sides in FA Vars action this weekend. I don't think we've ever featured them on the show in our 17 years, but they are one of those clubs I do keep an eye out on. And whilst I've never been to a match there, I can claim to have supported the Bar one or two times, although the Bar probably also supported me on both of those occasions. But it's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show chairman at Holmer Green FC, Mr. Rob Shedd. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thanks for the invitation.
Well, as I said earlier, earlier on the show, we were speaking to FA Vars Fact File, Phil Annetts, and said one of my favourite things about the FA Vars is looking down the list of names of clubs taking part and working out where in the country they are and craving a little bit of knowledge about their history. I know about you, but for those that don't know, how best would you describe Holmer Green, the football club, and how you got to here?
I think we like a grassroots football club. I've often said to people at the FA, we're the sort of club that should be being looked after by all the various things that happen within the organisation and the pyramid. We were first formed in 1908, so we've been going a few years. The club, we've got a sort of a nice gallery of the old photographs from back from the early days on display, and we're proud of our sort of grassroots, really. I think I tend to think that we're all here for a short period of time, and some we hand over the baton to somebody else to carry on for another few years after us. So we have a junior section and we have a senior section, but we are, what we like to believe, a true one club. We have one committee that manages the seniors and the juniors, and all the money goes towards kids playing football and adults playing football. So I think we try to epitomise what grassroots football should be about.
And that's what we love about people that are involved in non-league football as well. And again, from what you've said there, I know it's about the club and not you, but it's about all those people there as well. Because, is it fair to say you're a small village on the outskirts of High Wycombe? Is that in Buckinghamshire? Is it,
We have a population. Sorry, go on. We have a population of 4,500, Holmer Green does. And it's interesting when we play some of the larger towns who we do come up against in our league games, you do marvel at their resources and the fact they've got a much bigger population to draw upon. We've got 4,500 people to draw from, and we try to spread that involvement as far around as we can. So we are we draw players from Wickham, from Aylesbury, and beyond. So That's our current approach. But we are focused in quite a small community on the edge of High Wycombe.
Yeah, and it's the 50th year of the FA Vars this season. And I think your best run as a club was 2016-2017, reaching the second round. But without the magic of the FA Cup this season, because so few Step 6 sides could enter, does the FA Vars have that extra level of magic for a club like yours?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it does. It's nice. It's always a romantic thing, isn't it? Be part of an FA competition. We've had our form this year has not been fantastic. We've had some changes in our management during the summer, and we're gradually trying to get back on track. So, if I said we had a little bit of trepidation playing somebody as good as MK Irish tomorrow, I wouldn't be lying. But no, we just hope for a good game and an enjoyable day, really.
Yeah, I saw you started off the season so well with an opening league win. In fact, I think it's your first opening day win for 5 seasons, wasn't it? But you mentioned the new coaching team this summer, Trenell Richardson. He knows the level, but it's never an easy time of year with other commitments for players. Because the summer's great. It's great to get back playing football, but we have things like weddings, we have birthdays, we have holidays, and for clubs like yours at Step 6, I guess that has an impact as well.
Well, even this weekend, you get the situation where, you know, it's the Reading Festival this weekend, and loads of kids disappear to Reading to go and listen to pop music. So that's life at non-league level at Step 6. So that's what you have to manage. But we're all looking for the holy grail of a nice, steady management team with a bunch of lads that keep returning each year. But you know, that seems to be an impossible dream, and we seem to be every year starting afresh every year with our new bunch of players and new faces. So I think that's the way life is these days. But we've got a very strong youth team this year, so we're very hopeful that that will help to bring some youngsters through. And we hope to, you know, we're a young team already, so youth is very much the approach really going forward.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier, the sort of conversations you had with the FA, your opposition in the Vars from the Spartan League, and yourself, you spent so long as a club in that league before being switched to the Hellenic League, which I know really crippled you in terms of extra travel. Then there was more reorganisation of the pyramid, and you were back in the Spartan League for a short time. You're in the Combined Counties Division 1 now, and I sense you and the club feel happy about that, with more local trips.
Yes, I mean, I like to think we were crucified by the FA, by the various changes they made to our locations. For 3 seasons was just an absolute nightmare. You know, we were playing teams in Hereford. You know, it's crazy at our level having to travel, you know, 2.5-hour coach trips to Hereford. And then of course we get switched back into the Spartan, which was fantastic because we've had a long history in the Spartan. Nice people, nice league to go back into. Unfortunately, we got relegated our first year back in. We get into Division 1, and Division 1 last season, we were travelling. You know, our last game of the season was at Leicester's training ground. Now, what on earth is a Step 6 club being asked to travel 2.5 hours to Leicester to play a game? It was just absolutely ridiculous. So this year, they seem to have rejigged the Spartan Div 1, so it's more northern-type clubs. So that's why we've switched into the Combined Counties. And yes, it's much better. It's much more, it's better to get to the other grounds, and players are more encouraged to come and join you. And the problem last year we had is trying to get players to come and join us. And you say, well, by the way, we've got 3 or 4 games in Nottingham, in Northampton this month. You know, you're okay with getting up there. You know, it's just not easy. And I do feel we've been badly served by the people that have this magic pyramid on their bedstand, and you know, are beholden to this perfect 20 teams in every division. It's just the country isn't shaped that way, and I've always felt that we've had a rough steer the last few years.
And it must you mentioned there, it must make it difficult to get players, even when your focus is on young talent and trying to bring that young talent through. Young talent doesn't always come with a car, and to try and hire a coach nowadays, whatever level you're at, is almost as crippling as trying to insure a car as a young person.
Yes, logistics is difficult, and of course, I mean, the thing that no one has mentioned or really thought about yet is, because when we start going into Greater London for some of our games, there'll be this ULEZ charge to be manoeuvred around as well, because I'm sure not all the lads have got the perfect vehicle to go into Greater London. So all those issues are, you know, it's just something we just have to face and sort out, which is what we do.
Yeah, and I'd imagine, you know, having had this short conversation with you already, that on a match day, on a Saturday, you've got a great bunch of volunteers, because I know some of them already, but I assume, like many chairmen of clubs at your level, you wear a multitude of hats on match days too.
Yes. There's always things to be done. If nothing else, collecting the footballs that go over the fence into the adjacent field. So yeah, so you do whatever's required, and you know, the whole club is run by volunteers. So yeah, we're grateful for everyone. I've always said that anyone that volunteers at our club, I never refuse anybody. So no matter what they offer to do, if they're a volunteer, then they're welcome to come and help us at our club. So. Anyone listening, if they want to volunteer to come and help Homer Green, you're always welcome.
Yeah, and I always talk about that. It's an extra relationship of trust, I think. You know, when I'm going through my business away from football, if I know that there's a non-league connection, and that particularly if they're a non-league volunteer, that just suddenly you know they're a better person.
Yes, I think so. I think, yes, there is a certain camaraderie about it, but sometimes you just want a quieter life and just things to run a little bit smoother than they have been from time to time.
Talking about smoothly, then a number of hats next weekend, another big weekend for the club. You've got your annual junior youth football tournament. I know it's important to you both for the community and building the football club, but I'd imagine. Quite important financially as well to the club.
It plays a huge part in our finances for the year, the money we make from the junior tournament. We've been running it, I think, for over 15 years now, and it's gradually got bigger. We have a very good reputation. The guys that run the tournament, they run it obviously for a few years now, and it runs pretty smoothly. And it's a football tournament. We don't have bouncy castles. We don't have lots of other sideshows. We run it because we're a football club and we want people to come and play football and enjoy the tournament and enjoy the football tournament. So that's the focus that we have on it. And it runs pretty successfully. And this year, we're really delighted. We've actually got the Premier League trophy on the Sunday of our tournament, next Sunday the 3rd. We've actually got the actual Premier League trophy, which has been brought, which has been loaned to us by the Premier League, and with the Man City ribbons on, of course, and that will be on display at the club for those that attend the tournament.
You think you might be able to sneak some of those ribbons off and put some green and white ones on and just sort of have a pose?
I did suggest that. I actually asked the guy that arranged it for us if we could. We could have the green and white ribbons. I'm a bit horror struck, really, that you could do that. That you'd even ask to do that sort of thing. I'm told that the only people that can, actually touch the trophy are the Premier League winners. No one will be allowed to touch it. You can only look at it in awe, and the people that do touch it have to wear white gloves and all the rest of it. So it's all pretty high security as well. It comes with two security guards, so. It's pretty important for us to have it there.
Yeah, it's a great coup, as is your junior tournament. I guess, you know, FA prize money being what it is, it's not going to be turned away. I think it's £550 for the winners this round and £160 for the losers. But just a drop in the ocean, because you've got a big project on the go at the moment, trying to raise funds to get a 3G pitch in. Is that going to be just for training, or is that going to be for the main pitch as well?
No, it won't be for the main, so it's beside the main pitch. So the advice we had from the Football Foundation was that perhaps best for revenue purposes is to have it beside, we've got enough space to have it beside the main first team pitch. And that's what we're going to do. So we are expectant of getting planning permission very shortly. We've had an issue with the greater crested newt has delayed us for about 4 months.
I've had my own battles with them.
Resolve whether we've actually got any. But anyway, we now have a plan if everyone spots any now. And so that's now been resolved. And I'm told the report's being written as I speak. So we're hopefully getting the planning. And then we submit to the Football Foundation, we hope, in September with a decision in January. And then shortly after, the funds will flow and we can build it. So it's a fantastic thing for the football club to get this. It's a game changer for the football club to get such a fantastic facility. So it's been a hugely torturous process getting there, but hopefully we're getting closer and we'll be there this time next year.
Well, it sounds a very exciting time to be talking to someone from Homer Green. You've got the Premier League trophy, you've got a 3G around the corner, and hopefully some FA Vars success this weekend too. Rob Shedd, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We wish you well, and hopefully we'll speak to you again very soon.
Thank you for the invitation. Cheers. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Right, so whilst I've had my proverbial feet up during the summer, my colleagues, friends and fellow stalwarts of the non-league game have continued to put a shift in, week out. I, for one, am much obliged and much appreciative of the very same. And it's helped me keep an eye on everything else that's been going on. It's also helped keep my sanity on a Sunday morning. Whether they've kept their own remains to be seen, but it is time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers and a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Executive Editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Hi, Tim. Welcome back. I'm not sure about keeping the sanity. It's it's been non-stop. It's been a very busy summer, but enjoyable nevertheless.
Yeah, I mean, we're nearly a month into the season for many. I'd imagine it seems like football never went away for you guys, though, particularly with your great coverage of the pre-season games too.
It's absolutely flown by. It's been ridiculous, really. Yeah. One moment we're sort of planning a summer paper, and the next moment, pre-season friendlies start next week, and then a few pre-season friendlies turn into a huge card, and the next thing you know, you're writing fixtures for the start of the season, and you're having to do your previews. It's just absolutely flown by. Summers usually do, really, in non-league football, but I think this year more than ever. I think because it just felt like it never actually stopped, and I'm sure the managers sort of all levels will be saying the same. So no, we're not. There were quite a few of them that didn't stop either. Mm. So it's just all go these days.
Yeah, it was interesting to see, you know, in the national news the mainstream media, you know, showing all these pictures of all these Premier League players enjoying their holidays, and almost everybody that I've spoken to in non-league, yeah, we've had holidays, but I think everybody went away. What non-league people did when we didn't have mobile phones, I've got no idea, but getting away from football, I don't think it's possible anymore.
Yeah, there is a little sort of two, three-week gap where a lot of people go on holidays, and actually it's quite hard to fill because in that sort of 2 week gap, sort of around about sort of May, early June, people don't really want to discuss the new season as yet. I think they just want to sort of put their feet up, but it doesn't tend to last very long. And fortunately, we were able to fill a paper up with people who were available on the phones. But as I say, the days before mobile phones and emails, I don't quite know exactly how we would have done it, but it's amazing really to see, you know, to think sort of how things progress with sort of Zoom calls and everything that we do now. But thankfully those 2-3 weeks were over pretty quickly. All the managers, I must say, and the players and the chairman have been, as they always are, absolutely fantastic in being pleased to talk to us, and that enabled us to sort of to do what we could to sort of keep everyone abreast of what was going on with sort of features, etc. And I think it looked quite good. We had some very good feedback, and it set us up nicely going into the new season.
And that new season, it's a bit like, you know, I said we're a few weeks in, and it's now a bit like when you're going for a walk and you just sort of get over, just coming up to the top of the ridge, and you think, oh, I'm nearly there, and then bang, August Bank Holiday weekend. Well, if the weather gods are listening, we'll remind them it's August Bank Holiday weekend, but it's a much packed calendar of action across 4 days. And I know we talk about the 10 game mark, and you mentioned about, you know, managers maybe pre-season not wanting to look ahead to the new season. But yeah, quite often you find that after this weekend, it's when, you know, boards of football clubs become a little twitchy if results aren't going the right way. So I think this is about, you know, if you thought you were busy now, after this weekend, the treadmill sort of hits number 10, doesn't it?
That's right. It's that sort of a tricky period, really, where boards are just sort of finding out just how competitive their teams could be. We've had already two big weeks of FA Cup action, and this week we got Vars, and we've got FA Cup again next week. So it's been a lot of football, you know. What with the bank holiday weekend, as you were saying, with league football, there's some teams that are playing three times a week, which they usually do in August. And you know, I think in August some teams are playing 8 or 9 games, you know, so really do start at a fast pace, and it's just relentless. But as you say, it is that time where the boards do have an opportunity to assess really just how strong their teams are and sort of what direction the managers or the club are heading towards. And already we can see a few a few twitchy chairmen in the National League in particular, but also heading down in. It's a very interesting stage of the season.
Well, I was going to say, I'd like to think that the managerial merry-go-round is currently locked away for maintenance. You know, they're doing a little service on it at the moment. But, of course, we've already, as you reported in the non-league paper at the weekend, we've already had Liam Watson sack himself at Southport.
Yes, that was an odd one. The first major sacking, really, of the season, and he sacked himself. I think that was that was quite odd. I don't quite know what the situation is there. It was a little bit odd. I know Southport didn't have the best of starts, but I mean, if ever there was a club and a manager that belonged together, it's Liam Watson and Southport. Thankfully, he hasn't left the club. He's just moved upstairs, so the legacy continues, and I'm sure he'll have a very big say in who replaces him. But that's it. Must have been something that kind of grind on him maybe in the summer, to just play 3 games and make a decision like that after 3 games. I don't think it was a spur of the moment thing. It was obviously something that he was thinking about longer term. But they've obviously done it early, and Liam, as I say, he will. Knowing Liam, he will have no stone left unturned in finding the right guy to replace him. Now, how you go, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. And we mentioned all those fixtures this weekend. And interestingly, I see there's 3 games in the National League on Friday night, which I don't seem to recall before on a bank holiday weekend. I know we have various Friday games, but for Friday night action for three of those matches in the National League, it's not something I recall before. I guess that's probably clubs looking to capitalise on the summer holiday effect for fans, but also it does give those players an extra day to recover because they're all playing bank holiday Monday as well.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was quite an interesting one. I think you're probably right. I think it's probably a mixture of the two. Certainly having those extra few hours to prepare for the Monday game will be of interest to the to the managers. But as I say, yeah, I think maybe there's an element of experimentation in there, you know, seeing what it's like. Hopefully, if it's a nice evening, get a nice big crowd down. And then that allows the fans to go and do something on a Saturday. I think maybe it's part of that. Some clubs have tried it before, and some have held it as a success. We have seen a few Friday night games on in the pre-seasons, which helped as well. So maybe that was a part of it. But yeah, certainly interesting. Three big games as well, excellent games on Friday night, and that sets us up. That's us up lovely for another busy weekend.
Yeah, and one of those clubs playing Friday is Southend United, and a home game for them. And it's going to be interesting to see the fan reaction in a week when their ownership saga rolls on, but seemingly the club's rolls further down the hill, really, doesn't it? And another High Court postponement sends it off to October. But as a result of that, there's a 10-point deduction by the National League, which puts them on, what, minus four now at the bottom of the table. We see the coaching staff come out so positive as to what their aims are, and we know that they've got some great players there and great staff there, but it must be hard to, you know, when you're a player, a coach, can you really block all of that out of your mind and get on with your job?
I just feel so desperately sorry for Kevin Mayer and his team. They're the story of the season so far for me. They come out and that first game against Oldham, when they had 15 players, people weren't even sure whether they were going to play. There was pictures of Roots Hall Stadium being, you know, put up on social media, and volunteers come out and made sure that the ground was ready for the visit of Oldham, who were many people's favourites to go up this year. Came smashing 4-0, and that just goes to show what a talented group they are. And they won the second game at Dagenham very well as well. They lost at Dorking, but I mean, after those three games, you could see what a force they would be if they were allowed to be that force. And sadly it caught up on them this week. It could have been a lot worse. The judge said in any normal situation he would be winding them up today. So they were very, very close to what would have been an absolutely disastrous situation. And now we hear that an Australian group of an Australian consortium, I think, closing in on a deal, which would be great for the fans. Sadly, it wasn't quick enough to stop them from being deducted 10 points. But I think I think that's. That's a small price to pay for what could have been, and I just hope that this consortium can seal the deal, give the fans the club back, and I just hope that they can build on that strong start. And if they can, then I think they've got a team that can still compete even with that minus 10. I mean. Fabulous start, that 4-0 against Oldham. That for me was is the result of the season so far for me. Opening day,
you can see why another consortium's interested, can't you? Because there are those assets, that coaching staff, that unity they've got with the dressing room, the players they've got there, the fans as well. As you say, getting Roots Hall ready and that. But as you say, the judge at the court this week mentioned that, you know, in other circumstances it might have been the end already, and I think they've only got really four and a half weeks to get this offer on the line. It's going to have to. It's asking a lot of the business that are coming in to you know, be able to seal a deal that's sufficiently sealed for the judge not to take that next step the next time.
Yeah, that's right. I suppose the good thing is that they know this is an absolute deadline now. And you know, there's not going to be any appeals or any more adjournments or anything like that. It's something that they simply have to get done. And that pride and passion that you talk about from the fans, I'm hopeful. I feel they will help that deal to get done. And
and the Shrimpers Trust have done so well as well to even get to this, to help the club get to this stage as well. So we know how powerful they are as a just a magical unit, not necessarily sort of financially, but they've achieved so much already.
They have. It's a big football club. You forget what a big football club and what a powerful entity it is. You know, with fans and you know those outsiders. And they proved that with the volunteering to get the ground done. I mean, that was an incredible effort. You know, to get Roots Hall ready for that Oldham game in the space of 2-3 days. I think it was. I mean, the pictures I saw online, it was just like a desolate ground.
It was a bit like organizing. It was like organizing a big party at your old granny's house that hadn't had a lick of paint it was almost like Disney-fied, wasn't it? That they managed to get the game on.
It was incredible, absolutely, yeah. And to go on and then win the game 4-0. In the way that they did, it was just a huge celebration, not only for the team but for the club, but for the fans as well. It was a true group effort and thoroughly deserved. And then to go and beat their rivals, Dagenham, so well in the second game as well. It was a case of wow, you know, this is 15 players. Obviously they would have needed to have built on that squad. But to start the season with back-to-back wins with just 15 players and all that going on in the background just goes to show what a powerful entity it was. And I just hope that they can finally get over the line and get this whole crisis out of the way and they can finally enjoy playing their football again.
Indeed, and we'll keep following that. In that embryonic top of the National League after four games, it's no great surprise to me that we've got Barnet, Solihull Moors and Chesterfield all there, all unbeaten. Interestingly as well, Willston still unbeaten as well at this stage, and they've had a similar great start to last season as well. And I noticed Altrincham are the other unbeaten side, but three draws from there for see them sitting mid-table rather than pace-setting. But, you know, someone very famous once told me that you win titles by not conceding goals, and maybe that's what we're seeing there. Because I'm looking up and down, you know, some of the other tables as well, and it's sides that seem to have very good defences that are setting the pace across the pyramid.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Altrincham have always been renowned almost for being a tough place to go and get a result. They're just under Phil Parkinson. They're just a gritty outfit. Got some quality as well. Don't get me wrong, but they're always a tough to beat. And I think they could be dark horses maybe for a playoff place. That they've gone full time, haven't they? This summer they got players who know the leagues. I don't think they'll be far off at all. Willstone as well. Fast start, as you say, last year. Great start again this year. Whether they've got enough squad wise to keep that momentum going will be there to be seen. The team that's impressed me so far this year is Barnet, as you already mentioned. Unbeaten, it would have been a 100% record, but for that crazy game at Eastleigh where they found themselves 3-0 up and ended up losing in the 99th minute, or ended up sort of drawing, should I say, in the 99th minute. I'd say that would have been a 100%. And Dean Brennan all over. He just goes, about his business very, very quietly. He's pieced together a very good.
Now that's a phrase. I've known Dean Brennan for many, many years, and that's not a phrase I'd ever thought that anybody would ever say about Dean Brennan, as he goes about his business very quietly.
Yeah,
but he does.
Ironic, as
a manager at Barnet, he's just got on with the job.
He does. You're dead right. It's a very ironic thing, actually, because Dean loves to talk, but such a nice guy. He's one of football's nice guy. But yeah, I just think this Barnet job, he's just let everybody else do the do the talking. Very, very slowly and surely, he built together a good team there. A lot of people write off. Everyone always writes off Barnet. They got in the playoffs last year. Very, very nearly sprung a huge surprise. And I think they'll be thereabouts again this year as well. And if I can keep Idris Kanu, there's been a lot of talk about his future. Big sums of money that are being talked about. He started the season very well. If I can keep him and Kabamba up front, those two themselves are a threat to any defence. And I think they'll be very, very strong. Good to see Solihull Moore's back as well. You mentioned Solihull there. A disappointing season last year. I like Andy Wing. He's a good he's a good guy coming to the job in the summer, and they've made a good start too. So yeah, good to see them back. But the team for me that they're all chasing is Chesterfield, isn't it? There's four out of four at the start. They've made some big signings over the summer. They've made a huge statement of intent, and they're the team to topple. They were unfortunate really to get a 1-1 with Oldham in a game like last Saturday, in a game that they dominated. So another very late equaliser from Oldham there, but Paul Cook won't worry too much about that. He'll be looking at the bigger picture, and Chesterfield are certainly going to be the team to beat at the top.
Yeah, and in the north we've got Scunthorpe United setting the pace there. But interestingly, in the south, the top three were Worthy, Naveley, and Weston Supermare have already all been beaten this season, and it's actually Chelmsford, which are a little off the pace, that are the unbeaten side, and that probably highlights why it's these early tables are so hard to judge how the season's going to turn out.
Yeah, the South in particular is a very, very tight league, and I actually owe Overly a disservice. We had a conversation, Matt Badcock and I, in the non-league towers last week. Matt wanted to write a piece on Overly after their good start, and I said, "Oh, Matt," I said, "I think we should just wait a week." I said, because they got Worthing away on Saturday, and I said, look, a little bit, Worthing have started like a train. I said, if we do a big piece, big in Avely, and that potentially could be a big defeat for them. I said, let's just wait a week, see how it is. And of course they go and beat them, didn't they? That just goes to show what a tight division it is, and it also goes to show what a great start Avely have had. Yeah. I mean, that's, the team coming into step two for the first time. They expected to find it tough at that level, but what a great start, and Danny Scopes has done a huge job, and quite rightly Matt Badcock's done a nice piece on them in this week's non-league paper, probably a week too late, but
they've got a big local derby at home to Dartford, haven't they, this weekend, and Dartford are one of those sides that are yet to record a win in that division, showing how tough it is. So, hopefully that Matt's piece won't put the mockers on them.
That's right. Well, yeah, I hope so too. Thankfully, we avoided it last week. But, as you say, Dartford, the only one of the teams who've had a win. Noel and Dowson side is ever a poor side. You always put together strong teams, and they have done this year as well. They're always tough to beat Dartford, but just haven't managed to string together just yet. But I think we'll find. I don't think we'll be seeing them struggle this year. But it is a very, very tough and very competitive league, and fascinating really, because I really can't pick a winner from it.
Mm. Yeah, it is very early days, but we both I'm sure we look at all these divisions daily, and I think the South, whereas last year I think the North was the one that we couldn't put the proverbial fang paper between. I think the South is going to be the one this year. One other item of note this week, especially on the back of Matt Badcock's piece last week with Mark Harris in the non-league paper about the new ground grading system. I saw Westbury United's changing rooms have been ruled too small, and they're having to ground share temporarily at Melksham Town to get their continue their season in the Southern League at Step 4. And again, it was interesting highlighting the other things that clubs have to go through. We get so excited at the start of this season about the new players, the new management, the new coaching thing. But it's and even new stands that are opening and things like that. But it's actually the finer point, isn't it? The size of the changing rooms, the hospitality side of things. These are all big burdens on non-league clubs up and down the land.
It was a fascinating piece from Matt. It was something that he planned a couple of weeks before, and he went down to Hamwell Town. I think not quite knowing what to expect, and we thought maybe it would just be like a normal, just sort of going through what the regulations are. But the regulations have changed quite a bit, and it's not just the thing we notice is it's not just the rickety old seats, that need replacing. There's a lot more to it, and it's a tough old grading process, which I'm sure you would know. Mm. Sort of far more than us, just what clubs have to go through. But obviously, safety is paramount for fans and everyone who attends a stadium on a Saturday afternoon or Tuesday night. And there are standards that need to be kept, and that can't be compromised on. Yeah. And but Matt said it was fascinating, sort of just what they look at, and just how deep and how fine they go into sort of such scenarios, really. And I thought it was a fascinating piece, and certainly the feedback we've had from it has been excellent. From people who didn't really understand sort of just how deep and intense it can be. And obviously, if unfortunately like Westbury, you got a situation where the changing rooms are too small. I mean, who would have imagined that was a thing, So unfortunately, they've had to up sticks, and I'm sure at quite a big cost for a club of that size. I just hope they can get themselves sorted, and I hope that teams don't fall foul too much. Obviously, we need these standards. We need these safety OKs, don't we? I just hope it's not too tough on these clubs. But fascinating story, nevertheless.
Yeah, I never thought I'd become the man with the clipboard and the long tape measure. I mean, hopefully this new app that's coming in for the ground grading as well, that will mean I can probably put my clipboard down every now and then. But it is important. It is there for the right reasons. But it does take a lot of time, and it does take you. Yeah. So next time your own football club, just go over and thank that person that's in charge of all those sort of bits and pieces, because it's not the sort of it's not normally something that comes with a title either, but it's a lot of paperwork. Talking of a lot of paperwork, non-league paper this weekend. You've already spoken. Lots of league action, lots of FA VAR stuff this weekend. You have bumper weekend. We've got Friday, Saturday games, and I guess probably some previews for Sundays as well. You'll be leading the world, of course, with football coverage. Anything else we can expect in this weekend's edition of the non-league paper?
We've got a little bit of room left for news. We've spoken to Steve Cook, the Queen's Park Rangers central defender. He owns a Step 7 club, Westfield, down in Sussex, which is quite nice. And he tells about his fulfilment of just what that means to him. And we've also been down to Harbour Town, looked at a fantastic facility down there, and they're playing Step Four for the second time, but second season, I think. So they're a club on the up, and we've been down there to talk to them as well. Various bits going on, obviously. But Matt, looking at the FA Cup, plenty going on in the FA Cup. I'm speaking to Sharnik Richard tonight, actually. We're going to talk about them. They've knocked out Bury. That was a big scout for them, and they're at the highest that they've reached in the competition. So the cup stories and cup dreams already been fulfilled. Obviously, the Step Three teams are in there this year, this round.
Yep.
And we've been talking to the team who been matched up with Macclesfield. Plenty of things to write about, and looking forward to another massive weekend of action. But non-league play will be as busy as always.
And such a busy weekend for any non-league fan, because you've got the opportunity to go and see games sort of pretty much every day of your week. As I don't know many people do. I mean, I like to think that I know my non-league football until I speak to some of the groundhoppers and realise how many hours a week they put in watching non-league football. And so my hat tip to you guys at Non-League Paper Towers at the start of the show. I tip my hat once again to the non-league fans as well that keep help keep non-league ticking and all our clubs going. Thanks as ever for all your help and all your input. John, have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you. Cheers, Tim. All the best.
And that then is it for this week. Thanks as ever to all of my guests. Good luck to all those involved in the FA Vars this weekend and also league action. Plenty of football to get your teeth into. Finally, a big thank you to all of you for listening and supporting your patience as well for our return. Don't forget to tell all your friends that we are back and to share the pod. As somebody once said, every little helps. So you can, of course, follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom and on Apple Podcasts. Also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA. JABBA.